You were talking about the money, and I don't know about you, but money was the farthest thing from my mind when I started making folk toys. I think we got an awful independent heritage somewhere. I never worked at anything I didn't want to do in my life. When I was pumping wells, that's what I wanted to do, or I wouldn't be pumping wells. And when I'm making toys, that's what I want to do, or I wouldn't make a toy. I mean, I never did go hungry. I've never done anything I didn't want to. Not for very long, I didn't.
Wayne, you want to talk about how you got into making guitars?
Okay. Well, I got into making guitars just out of necessity. I've been playing since I was 5 years old, and just didn't have a good guitar, and no way of getting one because money was scarce down around our house too. And I had an old, my brother had a real cheap old guitar. This action was about that high, and neck pretty close, as big as my arm, you know. And when I started playing, to get a G chord reach up here, I couldn't reach around the neck and have to get it with my thumb and first finger from around. And there was one man that lived in the community that had a nice old Martin guitar. And I'd go up and take the chord on that guitar and listen to how it would ring. Just couldn't understand how anything could sound so good. And so I draw a pattern from it. I'd always made things out of wood too, ever since I can remember. Whittled, you know, made all sorts of little chains and stuff like that, you know. And I thought, well, I'll be able to make a guitar like that, just made out of wood. And so I drew off a lot of patterns and things off of that old Martin, and been trying to make them a little better ever since. The first one I got made, played, and was better than what I had.
After you finished that first one, did you realize you were going to keep doing it? Or?
Oh, yeah, that's all I've ever wanted to do.
Would you run a pick over that so people can hear really how great that thing sounds, because it's unbelievable.
Really haven't had a hold of it today. It's about probably out of 10. I guess it'd be all right.
That's lovely.
Was there anybody else around you that made instruments, or did you just figure it out?
No, there was nobody. None of my family, my folks on my mother's side, my grandpa was a coffin maker. They made, and there was some kind, I don't know if it was a law or some sort of regulation of some kind, that when somebody died, you couldn't make have a coffin made until they were gone. And then you had to sit up all night for about 2 nights or something to make a coffin. And I've never seen one, I've just seen a few pictures, you know. I'm in my folks on my dad's side, the family were blacksmiths. They made things from metal, you know, made all the horseshoes for everybody, and wagon parts, and hinges, and things like that.
Now, for making a guitar, there's a lot of elaborate things. You need the molds, and you need probably more machine tools than for what these two gentlemen are doing. Now, did you have those, or did you do the first one just
with whatever you could? The first guitar that I made, I had nothing but a pocket knife and a wood rasp and a few things, you know, just a little what I could dig up around the house.
Uh-huh.
And the guitar, it don't look like that one or anything, but it will play, and you can get by with it. And after I'd made a couple other guitars, there was one man in the community was a fiddle maker. Have you ever heard of Albert Hash?
No.
Never heard of him? Anybody?
He's been here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we know him well around here.
And, he was always my hero. He lived around, he was just somebody like, I guess he lived 20 miles away from my home, but I got to make a big long trip one day to get to go see him. And when I got there, I showed him my guitar. And he said, well, youngin, I'm going to give you some good wood to make you one out of it. And he ordered it for me, some rosewood. And I said, now you take this and make you a guitar. And so I did. And that one turned out pretty nice. And I did some inlays on it. And just had to make them by just trial and error, you know, to try to figure out how to do it. And that's been about 20 years ago or something. And I didn't know about any books or anything. If you get to read up on it and find out how to do it. And Albert didn't make guitars, but he made fiddles, and it was always handy to let me borrow tools, and he was a super nice person too, you know. And he'd go out of his way to help you any way he could.
It seems to me there's something different between what you're doing and everybody else in terms of you're working towards getting something perfected, although there's probably no perfection in it, but it's kind of keep building and keep building, trying to make the same thing but better every time.
Yeah, that's.
Do you feel that you still have some level of creativity in that?
Yeah, I figure there's probably no way to just make the best one, you know. And sometimes you'll make some guitars that will sound better than others, but every one you make, I figure, well, if I try, I can make one sound a little better than this one. And I'd be disappointed if I thought I'd make a guitar that was as good as a guitar could be.
Right, then what do you do?
What is it that makes your guitar sound better than... the type of wood?
I'm not saying it sounds better than like a nice old Martin or something. But, I really like the sound of that guitar and like to play it.
Is it because of the type of wood that you use to build it with?
That has some to do with it, and just it takes a lot of care and craftsmanship to put them together.
There's a lot of designs of the bracing too that you've worked out for yourself that other people haven't used, rounding the braces off, for example, and doing things like that that have improved it.
All sorts of little things on the inside like that you do to them to make instruments sound better, and finishing them down fine. Most any factory instrument you ever see, like the bracing, even something fine as a Martin or something like that, will be run from a table saw and glued in. And if you take a little extra pains and sand those braces and make sure every piece of wood that goes into those braces is perfectly straight grain, and all that sets up vibrations in the top. And then when a guitar gets made, put together real right to start with, the more it gets played, the better they sound. That's the reason old guitars usually sound better than new.
I think you just also run into, it's just a matter of an individual craftsman goes through every step, and every step is important, right? And if this one didn't come out right, you try to figure out, well, maybe it was because I changed the bracing. Where somebody at the Martin factory does the braces every time, and he may not pick up that guitar when it's done to figure out, you know, somebody plays the guitar at the end, but it's not every person that did every step of the guitar, and they don't sit there and go, oh, on this one I did this a little different. It didn't sound as good. So I think a lot of it is the care and the concern.
You're always trying to learn something about it.
Well, this still seems to be a problem, because there are so many variables involved in making the guitar that you would think you would have to make something like a couple of hundred before you figured out which was the variable that's important in producing which part of the tone.
Well, I just have a certain pattern that I've been making them by for the last 10 years or something, and I usually stick pretty close to it.
You must have found something that worked by luck then, the first time.
Well, I guess so. I think, of course, I still, like I say, if I thought I could come up with something better, I'd definitely work on it.
You know? Yeah.
But right now, I like the sound of that guitar.
I do too.
And I don't, you know, see any, you know, use to try to improve it right now.
How many guitars have you made, do you think?
I number them consecutive. And the one I'm working on downstairs now is number 75.
75?
Yeah.
How long does it take to make a guitar?
We're going to try to make 4 of them in 3 weeks. Down here while we're here. And normally back home in the shop where I'm just, you know, working hard as I can and work, and the time when I work every day, I can make one in about pretty much a week. But as far as the time involved, but now like the finish that goes on it is lacquer. And you have to spray a coat, and then it has to dry. You might take, you're talking about the time you're spending working on it, it might take you 15 minutes to spray a coat of lacquer, but it's got to set up and dry for the next day. And that, you know, takes stretches the time out, but the actual time you're working is not too much.
Do you buy a fingerboard with the notches already in, then you put the frets in, or
no.
How does that work?
I have a brother who's a machinist, and I have him make lots of little tools for me. And I had him make me a little flat piece of metal about so long, with it's got a little hole through the center of it at the position of every fret. And you slide this little block along, and it clicks in place at every hole, and it holds your fret saw, and you saw the fret slot, which that guarantees me getting the frets in exactly the right place every time. And it don't take over probably 30 minutes to saw the fret slots, which is a pretty good while, but like in the factories, they have a thing called a gang saw. There's little saw blades about this big around, 20 of them mounted on one shaft. And the big pulleys on it, and the whole thing slides. And the piece of wood is fastened down, and they slide over, it cuts all 20 frets at one time. And it takes maybe 2 seconds to do it or something. And that's, I guess you have to have things like that where you're producing thousands of guitars, you know, a year.
Do you ever work on more than one at a time, or do you work on different parts of the guitar while the lacquer's drying?
Most of the times I do repair work and things, and work on other guitars too, and sometimes mandolins and banjos. I make several of those. And most of the time just one, because I can be, like when I set my clamp besides in the form and blocks in while that's drying, I can be making the braces for the back. And the time I get those done, it's ready for to have the back glued on while that's drying, I'll be making the top, you know. Usually, if everything works real good like that and you don't get interrupted by something, sometimes a lot of people come in the shop and pick, which I don't mind that. Sometimes I've had a day planned, I was going to get this whole body, this guitar done, somebody come in and start picking and never do anything but pick, you know, which is my fault, you know, I could run mine.
I'd like to ask, you're in Pemberton, did people make their own musical instruments when you were growing up in your community? Yeah.
I have a friend, he's 75, very ill now. He made 3 fiddles, but in my area, nobody made them for other people unless it was a gift.
I mean, just for themselves?
For themselves. Sometimes there was a few. I liked what he said a while ago. I got a friend because he said there's not much money at my place either, or wasn't. I wonder how he knew I was a poor man. I wasn't putting you on the spot, but you're talking about the tool and stuff. Every tool that I got, and I probably got maybe $4,000 worth, but every tool that I got, I made the tool that made me enough money to buy it. That was a way we did it too. I mean, if that thing won't make enough money to buy me a good one, then it's not worth having in the first place. So I made the first turning lathe they ever saw.
Why don't we go on to Bjorn? We have a lot of people that weren't here when you talked before, so we may be repeating a little bit, but maybe you'd want to tell how you got to doing your whittling, and if there was anybody around that you watched do it, or it was just something that you picked up.
I just picked up myself. I never whittled around. Well, everybody whittled, but they didn't whittle out everything.
But they did, you were used to seeing people with a knife in their hand.
Oh, yes.
I mean, where I grew up in New York City, the only time you had a knife in your hand, it wasn't to cut wood, you know. When did you start whittling? Did you do it as a boy, or did you do it when you were older?
I started whittling when I started working in 58.
Had you always liked wood and been interested in it? And you had, one of the things, I think, this is his work, and it's very obvious that you like animals. And over there is a whole lot more of your work, and there's one Indian, which I wanted to ask you. It seems to me you've always had this enjoyment for animals. Was it difficult to do a person as opposed to an animal, or was that similar to try to cut that, or was that something special and difficult?
I never tried. I wouldn't try to carve, whittle out and he had enough to know he wouldn't put it in there.
Because?
No, I just didn't find another way. Had you
been brought up in a situation where there were animals, where you were aware of animals and particularly birds?
Yeah. Get out of the morning, they were driving mad in the woods. Get morning, here's a wild turkey gobbling. Yeah, crowds are drumming, the squirrels are barking, and the ground all be whistling at you.
You know, everybody's up here because you all work with wood, but I think there's such a different approach to how you all...
Let me show him a good bird since he's interested.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
One of my students made a bird.
And why don't you show us your toys, too, that you brought?
Well, I just want to show him the bird since he carved bird. This is one of the students made this week downstairs. We haven't been making birds as long as you have. You'll have to excuse my bird.
Wobbling the legs.
Looks like one of the mime students that's been here all week.
I may have him tangled up. We can't even show you what he'll do. We'll see. He's not so pretty. If I can get him straightened out. You never judge what a person can do by the looks of his face now. See that too.
Can the person that made that show us who you are?
He's trying to show us now. Hey, this is yours.
Where's he at?
Somebody's hiding.
I borrowed this one.
I bet you can't get one of them birds to do that.
Do you have more of your work in there?
I have a little bit of it.
Can
there.
You show
I just forgot to lay it up there. It'll just take a minute. That one right there, about 15, 20 years ago, my wife was watching Captain Kangaroo. We always watch the educational program. he had a paper cup on a yardstick and a boat tied on there and playing with the kids. And she said, you can make that out of wood. I'll bet you there's thousands of them scattered across the United States now. Somebody was making one down in Mexico, but he's putting the cup on the wrong end. We didn't know that when we met. Everybody in every country probably got tangled up at that. I was taking an old coat button, they generally was wood back at that time, and made them buzz saw out of it. We make them. I just got two or three. I'm going to hold you up on it. This takes nothing but a couple pieces of wood and shoes.
What are the tools you use on these?
Let's remove that fancy stuff.
You're going to get great on your mic.
Actually, you need no tools to make you one. If you're going to put out a wholesale catalog and the order starts rolling in, you got to get some tools. And then you cheat a little. You still use your pocket knife, but just enough to let them know it's been used. But you can do it.
Did you start out making all these by hand? And then now that there's the demand you went to?
First thing I bought was a little old saber saw, and it's so cheap that it didn't run very fast. If you ever use a saber saw, and that bugger just split the wood all the dickens. As soon as I got the money to buy me a good one, I sold that one to another fella. You never waste a
this
thing.
This is the best.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
This is nothing but a piece of electric wire. They say curiosity killed a cat, but sometimes it can make that. That's all I got. I got a lot more stuff, but that's all I brought up.
I was thinking, you know, what are the different tools that everybody uses? So everything you've got, you could have made by hand. And the other thing I was going to plug is who's selling what. You sell all your toys, right?
I sell mountain folk toys. Got a few downstairs if anybody wants them. Okay. I sell anything. Sell my car. I forgot the right thing. No, really, what we teach the students, he can verify that. You can take a coping saw for 4.5 and do anything that you can do with saber saw, band saw, or jigsaw. It just takes a lot longer to do.
Do you think there's a difference in the quality?
I think perhaps if you didn't make one for yourself, it'd be better.
Is there a difference in the way you feel after you've made it by hand versus with the machine?
A great deal of difference. money, I guess. If you made it by hand, you die as poor as you started. So you get to cheat a little bit on that. And if it's going to be handmade or folk toy, you never copy from an exact pattern. If you had another buzzsaw there, I guarantee you wouldn't be the same size as that one. It'll be every one of them that you get a hold of, and then it's one of a kind. There won't be no more like it. No pattern lathe. I bought one of them things and put it on, had it on about a half hour and threw it in the corner. We make our own lathe knives out of files, better than anything Sears & Roebuck got. And do our all free cut.
Did you have toys like this when you grew up? Did you play with toys that were homemade?
No, mine would probably have been a chip out of the chip yard. We grew up burning wood, no electric. And you find a good sized chip, if it was already shaped a little bit like a paddle wheel boat or something, it didn't hurt. And then you take a hatchet and hew the thing out, throw it in the creek and try to stone it under. Because you went as far as you're allowed to go, and then you get your boat taken back up and put it back in. No, mostly, he told me about probably just whittling up a stick for nothing. And my daddy had caught you at that, you wasted 15, 20 minutes of that, you wouldn't have sat down for a week. He'd have made you work at something that was of some benefit for something somewhere.
And toys were not a benefit?
He wouldn't have bought you one. Uh-huh. I mean, he bought you the knife. I think a Barlow was 50 cents. And a Barlow at that time was a good knife, and not no more. It cost you $30 for a good pocket knife now. But when you got the knife, you was on your own. I mean, whatever you could make that fine dandy, and how amount of time you cut your finger off didn't make any difference. I cut one finger off with a butcher knife because it would cut better than a pocket knife to cut me a hickory to bend to make me a bow. And got my finger too close and cut the finger off there. But I got scars all over that. Seldom ever get a scar now. But that's the way you learn.
Jeff, what kind of tools do you use?
I cut my hand all the time.
What kind of tools do you use?
Primarily a draw knife, spoke shave, shaving horse to render the wood.
Are you tempted to use mechanical plug-in tools?
Sometimes for some things, some processes, when I think it would do a better job, primarily. But, I guess I could use a lathe. I get that. One of my students keeps ribbing me about getting a lathe. But I think you have to split the wood. If you want to make chairs, you have to split the wood. That's really crucial to get straight grain wood, especially if you want to bend it. So that means getting logs. You have to go out and get logs. You can select your wood a lot better if you go out and choose perhaps in the woods or even in a sawmill. But you can see the log, and that's you need straight grain wood to make quality furniture, especially chairs.
Where did you learn to do what you're doing?
Self-taught. Just kept doing it.
Figured it out, or did you see something?
Just get old chairs, take them apart, you know, and then copy them, sort of, you know, or use them and see what you don't like and change it into what you like. It's not that hard, you know. It's simple to do that, but. Of course, there were a lot of errors along the way.
You make your chairs to sell, right? Is that mm-hmm. your main support? Mm-hmm. And what I really am leading to, does that take away from your enjoyment of making the chairs?
Since sometimes
you have to, do it because you need to go buy.
Right. You
something.
Have to be very efficient. It has to be. Sometimes you can't spend as much time on something as you'd like to, or you feel you should, because there's an economic factor involved. Survival, primarily, and I don't like that. No, I don't like doing that.
I think you run into, in traditional crafts, sometimes, like Wayne has another job that he does, which I think it takes the pressure off of having to finish the guitar, having to get it produced, and it allows you that leeway of if you don't make as much on the guitar, you still have the regular paycheck.
Yeah.
Whereas I would think for you, it does get to be kind of, I have to produce, I have this show coming up, I have this coming mm-hmm. up.
It takes a lot of the fun out of it, I think. Some people like that, they like to work under pressure, they can do well. I don't.
What do you make for yourself? Anything?
Mm, Not really, no. I make chairs, you know, so I keep a few. I've kept these, but not very, very many.
Do they get better, like an instrument? Do they get better
of course.
The longer they're setting?
Oh, the more you set it? I think you're going to say that they get better as I make more.
You don't sit in an instrument, though.
It picks up your vibration.
She got that right. That's probably one of the hardest things about chairs is that they have to be light and enough. They have to be picked up, so they have to be light. And you look at them from all sides, but yet they have to support perhaps 250, maybe 300 pounds if you're, you know, hanging out with some real hefty people. So that, you know, that's one of the hardest things about chairs is that they have that requirement. They need that strength. That's one of the reasons why I think the selection of the wood is very crucial.
Do you age your wood at all? It's
not really age. It has to be dried because the wood is used. I usually work it green. And certain portions of it have to be dry.
How about you? Is your wood green? Is it dry?
I don't have a kill. You cannot use green wood if you expect to keep the product. Because it's cracked. You turn the prettiest vase you ever saw and bring it in and set it on the mantle. If it's not dried properly, some time when you're watching TV, it'll go bang and spit from top to bottom. A good policy if you're going to air dry is figure 1 year per inch. If you've got a 4x4 black walnut that you just cut, you better wait at least 4 years before you use that fella.
Do you find that to be the same for you?
Yeah.
Do you have a stash of wood at home that you're waiting to cut?
Oh, yes.
And if somebody has a piece they want you to cut, they better put it aside for a while, huh?
That's for sure.
did you ever have an experience when you first started where you cut a piece of wood and it hadn't dried and you didn't know it should have?
No.
You knew that.
I'd be sure it was dry.
What about you?
That's the same. Some of the wood that I use in my instruments come locally, you know, like the spruce. The wood in the top of that guitar grew in West Virginia. And the government clearing out for some lookout tower on top of some mountain, things down more toward our. But anyway, that has to lay up for a couple of years at least, the spruce, because see, I resaw it, and it's more than 1/8 of an inch thick. Like he said, if it's 4 inches thick, I'd have to wait 4 years. But the other wood, like a rosewood and mahogany that I use, that has to be imported. And it's supposed to be old, you know, when you get it, like aged out. But you can never trust them for sure.
I
usually try to order enough wood ahead of time that lays around my shop for a good long while before I use it in an instrument.
Do you have a preference towards hand tools, machine tools, or do you find that it varies for each
part
of what you do?
Just whatever does the best job. I belt sanders, and I have a machine that the tops and backs have to be an exact thickness, you know, or sometimes I go by the wood, you know, how flexible the wood is. But they have to be an exact thickness. And I used to take a window glass and lay it down the floor and scrape it until I got it down to the thickness, which was a miserable job. It'd take hours and hours. Now I have a big old sander that I found that has a drum this big around and about that long. It works like a planer, except it's got sandpaper on it. And you can sand pieces of wood down to make inlays that are like 1/28 of an inch thick with that big old huge sander, and just precision thickness, you know. So which that machine does a much better job than I could ever do with my window glass scraping it, you know. And does it in 10 minutes, you know.
And it's the same quality?
It's a
better quality.
Better quality, because that machine just can do it much more accurately than I could, or either would. You know, when you sit down, hump down, scrape it with a window glass for 3 or 4 hours, you get tired. And if there's a little bit of a thick place, you say, well, that's probably all right. But that machine, the way it runs through there, it's perfect, you know, exactly the right size and thickness. Things like have little routers that cut around for the inlay that goes around the outside, which does a real nice, even job doing it. Which the first instrument I made, I did that with a pocket knife, which I could do a pretty good job doing it, but it took hours and hours and hours to do it. And when you spent those hours, then when you get down to the end, like it's easy to, you know, quit before something is just perfect, you know.
Mm-hmm. How about you? You talked a little bit before about the tools you use, but why don't you tell everybody again Because again, I think we've got different people. You mostly use your knife, right? It's, now, is there a time when you think a machine, you know, some kind of plug-in tool might be quicker, or do you think that's
without a doubt? But I never, you know, I never and, I know that I never could know about that production of no bio and tools. I could never make that much headwinds, you know.
Are you happier with the tools that you're using, you think?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I am. They suit me fine, but of course, you know, they saw, you know, and rasps and things that would come in awful handy, but they're too expensive for me.
So you find it's the economics that keeps you from it, rather than, you know, that it's the not wanting to put out the money to buy it, that it more than the, you know, I think everybody else is, I don't know, there's different reasons, you know, for wanting to use one tool over the other, whether it's a choice of, you know, like he said, it had to make him enough money to buy it, you know, so you're saying you don't feel it would make enough money to buy it, but you would be interested in using it?
No,
or you really
think,
wouldn't?
No, I don't think. Of course, you know, there's different kind of knives, but a set of them knives costs you, 12 knives costs you $100. And just a light built like that, of course, they're made in Sweden. They're good, but they don't.